Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop from Washington. I'm your host, Mark Levine, reporting live from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. Now, special treat today, I have an in-studio guest. His name is Larry O'Connor. He's on WMAL. He's a Republican talk show host, and he actually invited me on his show last week and is gracious enough to come here. We are live on Facebook, by the way. But we're being pre-taped. So if you're on Facebook, you're watching us live. If you're on the radio, you'll have to go to Facebook if you actually want to see the clip. And it's right there at facebook.com/MarkLevineTalk. So, Larry, welcome.
Thank you.
To the Center for American Progress.
I appreciate you inviting me.
I appreciate your coming here. Before we start and really get into it, I think there's something that you and I both agree on. And let me see if we can get some
agreement. I bet there are a lot of things we agree on.
I believe, and I want to see if you agree, that the American people, on the left and on the right, are too often in their respective silos, listening to radio shows from people they agree with, watching TV shows people they agree with, on social media, on Facebook, talking to their friends with whom they agree, even doing Google searches, which are skewed toward views they agree with. And I think we, the American people, need to talk to people with whom we disagree more often.
I agree. I do agree. I do think, though, as a person who comes from the center-right perspective or right-of-center perspective, it's a relatively new phenomenon for us. You know, I think the advent of talk radio, the advent of new media-type outlets that we've seen grow in the last 20 years on the internet has made it possible for us, sadly, on the right, to be in that same silo. Back before that, we had Dan Rather and Peter Jennings and Tom Brokaw, and we had the New York Times and the Washington Post and any other major newspaper, all sort of stemming from the new journalism wave of activist journalists disguised as nonpartisan.
So you think Walter Cronkite was a closet liberal, basically?
I think that's pretty documented fact at this point, isn't it? Of course he was. Okay. I would
say that Walter Cronkite reported the news and tried to be as objective as he possibly could be, that actually it helped America to have one sort of objective source. Of course, I believe the New York Times and the Washington Post tried to get at objective fact, and you actually don't think so. You think they try to skew the news to fit a certain political ideology.
Yeah, I do.
And you think Fox does as well, just on the other side.
I do, although I have to say I think that we've both been on Fox News before together,
yes,
actually. And I think that they do present, you know, I think what Fox News did differently than their predecessors was on a regular basis when they have a exchange of ideas or an exchange of political perspectives during their daytime and during their morning shows. The primetime lineups are a little different, and I'll get to that in a moment. I think they've been over backwards to make sure that both the left and the right were represented. The CNN did that with Crossfire, and that was about it, or maybe one other panel show. But when they had pundits or guests on, they were almost always left of center.
You've obviously never been a progressive on Fox News. I've been on shows where there are literally five people in a box who disagree with me, and I'm the only one. So while I appreciate they having me on,
yeah,
I wouldn't exactly consider it fair.
Well, enough. No, listen, when it started, I believe that it was for the most part like that. I think that many of the shows did skew a little bit too far to the right, and that's where I mentioned the primetime shows. But I've been on MSNBC, and I've been on that same box.
No, I understand, and I agree.
And CNN
I agree that MSNBC has a point of view, or at least Rachel Maddow does. I don't agree that CNN, Washington Post, and
well,
New York Times.
Their paddles, but at some point, it looks like the Brady Bunch with all their boxes.
Are you saying, in essence, there is no such thing as objective media, people who just try to get the facts, that there's not a single reporter in the nation that is just trying to say the truth, that everyone is skewed to a point of view? Is that your
Well, I think human beings are skewed. I think
tries to be objective in the media?
I didn't say that. And I think that people, individuals, do try to be objective, and I think institutions try to be objective. They attempt to, and they are... in their mind, they think they're objective, certainly. The New York Times doesn't sit there and say, yeah, we're a liberal news organization.
You may recall who broke the Hillary email story. It was the New York Times.
I noticed that.
You
must
be very appreciative of this right-wing ideological resource to help you, win an election off of
They that. Also ran... A, no, no, no. Vladimir Putin won the election.
Well, he did.
For us.
He did. Well, we're going to get to that.
They also ran several articles, actually, that took up the whole lie from the Clinton campaign that was supported by the Obama administration that the FBI wasn't conducting a criminal investigation. It was a security review. We now know that to be a lie. So the New York Times
reporting what a campaign said is not allowed.
No, they verified what a campaign said. They also verified that the Benghazi attack started because of the YouTube video.
We're getting way off, though. I'm glad we agree that we should get out of our silos more.
By the way, if I can really quickly, I have you on my program, and hopefully when you have me on my program, it's not an exercise of me trying to beat you in a debate or try to win points or try to change your mind. I don't want to change your mind, but I do want your voice to be heard.
Exactly. No, and I don't think either of us are under the illusions we're going to have this great epiphany and walk out of here. I'm like, you know, Larry, you're absolutely right. Or vice versa, Mark, you're absolutely right. I'm changing my views. But it's important for our listeners, yours and mine, to hear from another side, to hear how we debate the arguments.
Totally agree.
So that, frankly, it helps us frame discussions and all be more aware.
I agree.
So let me turn to the issue of the moment. And I think there is a single issue above all others that is in the news today for good reason, and that is Trump Care. that is the Republican plan just passed by the House to, in their view, to repeal and replace Obamacare. And I want to start with just some basic philosophical beginnings.
Because
I think it's important for us, before we make some argument, political or otherwise, I think it's important to know our philosophies, where we stand on the right and the left, so we know where we're going, we know what the basis is. And I want to play for you something that an Idaho congressman had to say at his town hall. And you can go ahead and put on the earphones there. Sorry about that. Or you can take mine, because I've heard it before. And Mark Grimaldi, if you could please play, it's just 17 seconds. This is from
this is a
town hall. You probably heard it already.
Sure.
This is Labrador, Idaho Congressman Labrador.
Roll Labrador. You are mandating people on Medicaid except dying. You are making them.
No one wants anybody to die. You know, that line is so indefensible. Nobody dies because they don't have access to health care.
Now, of course, this is Idaho. That is not blue America by any stretch. That is hardly San Francisco. And yet he was, you know, roundly booed at his town hall. But let's leave the reaction aside. Let's just deal with the philosophy here. Do you agree with his statement that no one dies for not having access to health care?
Well,
do you think he's wrong about
that?
If
you're sick and you don't go to a doctor and for some reason you can't go to a doctor to get well, you're going to die.
Okay.
So that's a fundamental...
Right. Exactly. But, so he's just wrong about that, or he misstated it.
Well, again, listen, I never put myself in a position where I defend any politician or try to interpret what a politician has to say.
I'm not demanding you agree with it. I just want to ask you the question.
However, if the question was people are dying in the streets and they're unable to, you know, if somebody gets hit by a car, they're going to die if they don't have health insurance. That doesn't happen in America, and it didn't happen before Obamacare.
Because people go to emergency.
Exactly.
But if you have cancer or diabetes or any kind of treatable disease that whereby all those diseases, if you are seen by a doctor early, if you're treated, if you can get preventative care, if I have a heart condition, there's medication I can take if I can go to a doctor that might just prevent a heart attack. Whereas by the time I have that heart attack 2 years later, not only am I much more likely to die in the emergency room, but frankly, it's a lot more expensive for the person, for society to have to pay for it. It's expensive in terms of dollars. It's expensive in terms of the fact that taking a pill is relatively easy for me to do, and having my chest cavity cut open for emergency quintuple heart bypass surgery is a much less pleasant experience than taking a pill.
Right, but even if you take the pill, you might end up having to need that procedure. So let me sort of ask you, you're asking about fundamentals. Let me ask you this fundamental question.
Let me get agreement, and then you feel free to ask me back. You agree that access to health care leads to less people dying. That's a fair statement. If not, I can read studies from medical societies.
I'm not going to say that because everybody dies. So less people.
Excuse me.
This is a question of life
early.
Expectancy.
All right, dying
well,
early.
Well, that's important.
Right. So you might. Fewer people will die earlier if they have access
to
health care.
If they take care of themselves, sure. And that means going to the doctor. It means being responsible.
And that means being able to afford health care. Because if you can't afford to go to the doctor, the fact that a doctor exists is kind of irrelevant.
Right.
Okay. So let me. Did you want to say something, or should I move?
No, go. Well, I wanted to pick up on your analogy about the heart disease, because here's a more fundamental question. If we all agree that if someone has a heart disease, and God forbid this ever happens to you, Mark, the scenario you just painted, here's my question. Let's say you make $100,000 a year, and Bill Gates is a multi-billionaire. Do you both deserve, quote unquote, access to the exact same kind of care?
Well, in my view, healthcare is a right.
Privilege.
You would say privilege. That's what I'm getting at. That's why I'm starting with basic philosophical
That's
principles.
Really the basic
I think
fundamental.
That people who have a treatable condition deserve to live even if they can't afford to pay for their healthcare. You disagree.
So I'm going to borrow liberally, actually, from Kevin Williamson, who wrote a great article in National Review today that you should read. It's because just by saying health care is a universal right, mm-hmm. it doesn't fix anything. Just saying it's a right.
Well, I'm starting with the philosophy, and then we could talk about the ways to get there.
But people sanctimoniously,
I support proposals that would allow people to, if they have a treatable medical condition, that's not inordinately expensive, because I accept I accept that to give a 100-year-old a heart transplant for $1 million when they're going to live 1 month further doesn't make sense.
If it's his $1 million, can he?
Yeah, I'll accept that.
Ah.
I'll accept that. But, you know, if a baby is born with a cleft palate or some other disease that's treatable and they can't afford it, I think we as a society should take care and pay for that baby. Do you agree?
If we as a society should take care of that baby is very different than saying every human being has a fundamental right to health care. And here's why.
I think the baby has a right, should have a right under the law to get treatment, whether or not his mom can afford it.
I am willing to say that we as a society can decide how to help babies who are sick or people of various ages if they're sick and cannot afford health care without actually walking down the path of saying it is a universal right. And here's why. If you look at the basic rights that are God-given rights, in my opinion, that were articulated and defined in the Bill of Rights and the Constitution, all of those rights don't require someone to provide it for me. Do you understand?
Well, when you say
none of them have a dollar sign attached to them.
When you're saying it's not a right, you're in essence saying that some people are going to be too poor to get the health care they need to live.
That's not true. Again, I can say that if we as a society decide that we wish to provide health care for people who can't afford it, that isn't the same as saying it is their right to health care. It's just we as a government.
But you're saying society shouldn't provide it.
I didn't say that. Just wait.
When
hold
I
on.
Say it's a right,
hold on. Do you
I
have,
mean
do you have a right?
Do you
have a fundamental human right to a college education?
A human right?
Yes, that's what we're talking about right here. Human rights.
I would
do you
say
have a human right to a college education?
I believe that anyone who is intelligent enough and good enough and academically qualified enough to attend college should be able to attend college.
Do you have the right to transportation?
I believe that transportation should be provided.
Do you have a right to transport? Well, the point I'm making
is... depends where you live.
Okay, but that's my point, Mark. We as a society through
but
our...
But pretty much, yes. I do
we as a society through our government mm-hmm. can decide we're going to do this thing because
right.
it is better for our society, but that doesn't mean it's a
when
right.
When I say it's a right, I mean government should provide.
Well, and that's not the same thing because, see, the government doesn't provide my free speech. Right.
Actually, it does. It doesn't. It doesn't
no,
put
it doesn't.
You in jail for saying.
Oh, thank you,
that,
government, for not putting me in jail.
Right,
no. The government is precluded from putting me in jail
because
we have
right.
told them.
Because it's a right.
We have a God-given right to that.
And
so
I
we have a God-given right to an automobile.
Well, it's not a God-given right. Free speech isn't a God-given right. It's a constitutional right. Right. It's right here.
So the Constitution gives us the right to free speech.
Yes, it does.
Okay, and that's a fundamental difference between how we view things. I believe our founders thought that these were basic human rights that were given to every person when they were born, regardless of whether there was a United States Constitution. We have the right to free speech.
We all know countries all over the planet that don't allow
free speech. I understand that, and that's horrible. But don't we believe that they deserve the right to free speech?
Yes, we do. I also think.
And it's only because a terrible government doesn't have that.
And in every country on earth that's industrialized, other than the United States, they get health care. I gotta take a break, Larry.
Oh,
in the middle of a discussion.
Love it.
But we will get back.
You betcha.
Folks, we'll be right back right after these messages.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded, liberal American. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275.
Welcome back to Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. My guest is Larry O'Connor. He's Republican talk show host from WMAL. And we're talking about whether health care is a right or a privilege, and specifically about the Republican plan, which we might call
Trump care. Haven't even gone to that
Trump care. Well, we're going to get there.
So,
because you don't think it's a right, but privilege, let me just ask you about a comment that Congressman Mo Brooks of Alabama made. And I'll put, for my internet listeners, you can kind of hopefully see it on the screen.
There you go.
There we go. Republican congressmen suggest that poor people don't deserve health care because they don't lead good lives. Let me just basically ask.
I love headlines that say suggests.
Well, we can. What were the exact quote? That's a fair point. Here's what he said, and here's the exact quote. Quote, it will allow insurance companies to require people who have higher health care costs to contribute more to the insurance pool that helps offset all these costs, thereby reducing the cost to those people who lead good lives, they're healthy, they've done the things to keep their bodies healthy, and right now there are the people who have done things the right way that are seeing their costs skyrocketing, quote,
okay.
Unquote.
Well, I didn't see anything in there about poor people, but that's
well,
fine.
Well, basically, as I understand first principles, Republican principles, conservative principles, it's about rewarding the lucky. If you are born rich, if you're healthy, if you know your father's a billionaire, you should be rewarded. Your taxes should be cut. The government should make sure that your lives are better off. If you're poor, or if you're unhealthy, if you have a genetic disease, if you have cancer, if you're already suffering, it's government's job to make you suffer more, because in some, I don't know, a religious sense, you deserve the pain, and it's just not the role of society to equalize the burden. We don't want redistribution of wealth. So if you're born lucky, stay lucky. And if you're born unlucky, well, you know, them's the shakes. God really doesn't want you to have all these privileges. Society doesn't either. As Ayn Rand might say, you're on your own.
Wow.
That's how I see the fundamental difference.
Is that really what you believe?
It is really.
Is it what we think? Is that really what you think we believe?
I think it is. You know,
that's not just political rhetoric. I've
read Ayn Rand. I've read The Fountainhead. I've read Atlas Shrugged. I've heard your Speaker of the House. And it's my view that Republicans don't believe that whatever you get is yours, whether you get it because you worked hard for it or whether you're just lucky and have a billionaire father. That's why you're against estate taxes generally. So if you're born lucky, if you're born healthy, and everything's great for you, we should do our best to get out of your way and make life easier and better for you. But if you're born unlucky, if maybe you have a genetic disease, you know, maybe you're born with a cleft palate, that if Hillary Clinton said it takes a village, Republicans say you're on your own.
Well,
do your best.
You're talking to a parent.
I got to take a break. I got to leave that out there, but I promise I'll give you a full chance to respond
phenomenal. When
we come back. We'll have a much longer segment. If you want to comment, you can comment because we're live on Facebook. Otherwise, you'll have to wait till Wednesday to call in and talk about the show. We'll be right back right after this.
Now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. It is my privilege to have as my guest sitting right next to me, and if you watch us on Facebook, you can actually see our smiling faces, Larry O'Connor. He is a Republican talk show host on WMAL in the conservative wing of, which actually most, as we know, most talk radio is. By the way, how long have you been on that WMAL?
I've been on WMAL for 4.5 years. I chuckle every time you say Republican talk show host because I actually don't describe, I let people know I'm a Republican, but I'm just a talk show host.
Well, all right, fair enough.
But you're right, I am right.
It's all good. I want to give you a chance to respond to what I said, because I said something that I truly believe. I think fundamentally the difference between a liberal and a conservative, a Democrat and Republican, it comes down to one of empathy. I think when Democrats look at a society, look at our country, we think
as Hillary Clinton said, it takes a village to raise a child. We believe that e pluribus unum, out of many one, that we are all responsible for one another, that if you will, we are born alone and die alone, and it's only with the help and good grace of our fellow human beings that we survive and live and prosper, and therefore we ought to give back to others who are in need, and that we as a society can achieve together when everyone helps everyone. You never know when you're going to get some terrible disease, where, you know, you never know if you're born lucky to be born the child of Donald Trump or born the child of, you know, a father in prison and a mother on drugs and in poverty. And therefore, everyone, that all men and women are created equal, and we should do our best to help everyone. And I believe that conservatives are much more of the I got mine, Jack school. Don't take my stuff away to help somebody else. That's their job to help themselves, and if they're in poverty and they have cancer, you know what? Good luck, sir. You know, try to achieve, but I don't have any responsibility toward my fellow human being. So I would argue at the end of the day, it's liberals who follow, if you will, biblical teachings about looking out for your neighbor as thyself, and conservatives are all about self-help, which is a good thing, and self-reliance, but not so much about using our government to help others.
I actually think that, again, we have a lot more in common than you would imagine. I think that you painted with some pretty broad brushes and some pretty broad stereotypes as well there. It's interesting to me that most of the senators, the U.S. senators who were multimillionaires, are Democrats. There's a whole lot of very, very rich liberals out there, like Warren Buffett, like Jeff Bezos,
there's nothing inconsistent about being rich and caring about the poor.
What I'm saying is, I'm not saying being rich is bad.
I just get what I'm saying. No, I'm saying that people like Warren Buffett are giving most of their wealth away.
How are they doing that?
They're giving away through charities.
You're right. And that is the fundamental difference here, because conservatives, of course, care about our fellow man, and we want to help our fellow man. We just don't believe that the government is the best way to help our fellow man, and we don't believe that the government should confiscate people against their will, confiscate their funds, and confiscate, yes, the fruits of their very hard labor.
Or the fruits of their great-great-grandparents' hard labor, because you don't believe in the estate tax.
You keep going back to that, but again,
you believe in a landed wealth, a landed gentry, that if your great-great-grandfather made a lot of money for whatever reason, by working in by creating a new idea or by owning slaves, whatever it is, all that wealth needs to be passed down and should never be taxed.
Well, I don't begrudge their wealth, but honestly, I think in our country, that's very much the exception, not the rule. I think that.
But you wouldn't have an inheritance tax of any kind.
No, because I think that if I work my tail off, let me go back to what I was about to respond to before we had the break. You're talking to the parent of four children, two of whom have special needs.
Okay.
When my first child was born with cerebral palsy after a very rough labor, I didn't immediately say, oh my God, this is a horrible situation. What will the government do for me? What I said was, I need to work my ass off and make sure that I make enough money so that I can take care of this child.
And if you can't, and because you're on a minimum wage, the Republicans don't want to increase.
Well, by the way, I was making hardly any money at that time. Trust me on that.
Do you think that a parent could take care of a kid with cerebral palsy on minimum wage today?
Let me go back for a moment. Right. But I also did seek out help. Yes, there were some state agencies that helped me out, and I'm in favor of states doing things like that. I was in the state of California at the time. But there were also a lot of charities, private charities and private church-funded charities that do a lot for parents in need as well.
You don't
and
really
so,
believe that private charities take care of all the people in need in America.
Not all the people,
or even come close.
Actually, they do a hell of a lot. Actually, in fact, it's funny, when you go back to Jimmy Kimmel and his heart-wrenching story about his baby, where did his baby get the surgery to save his heart? It was at Cedars-Sinai, a private funded hospital, not a public hospital.
It was at the Children's
Hospital of Los Angeles. And where did they get all of their money? Not from the government, but from, if you've ever driven by Cedars-Sinai in Beverly Hills, there's a whole lot of wings of that hospital named after very wealthy
Wednesday's entire show about the cost of healthcare.
But it's not a question of care.
You don't believe that we as a government should require people, okay, we as a society, we as a government, we as a democratic elected polity, should require people who don't want to part with their wealth, whether it be the wall. Warren Buffett does, but certainly the Walmarts of the world, the descendants of I forget all their names, or the Koch brothers, people who have hundreds of millions of dollars and don't care to share and help the poor. Your view is, you know what, if they want to be selfish, they can be selfish, and society shouldn't punish them for being selfish, and they have every right to be selfish. And in fact, if a poor kid has to die because the Koch brothers are being selfish, you're okay with that trade-off in society.
You are literally a pounding-the-table kind of talk show host. That's impressive. I've never actually seen one.
Well, listen, I care. What do you want from me?
I care, too. And I don't think the question here is whether the people have empathy or not. It's whether how we believe people can truly be helped. Because guess what? We've had 50 years since the Great Society under Lyndon Johnson that was supposed to alleviate poverty and alleviate all
and
of these maladies.
It's done a tremendous job.
Really, because things aren't looking so good right now in our economy.
Do you know what America was like in the 1960s?
Actually, before rural electrification, before Medicare, before Medicaid.
Do you know that the poorest segment of society were the elderly?
Yeah, so right now, under the war on poverty, how is poverty done under
it's
the,
way
under the
down.
War on poverty?
It's way down. Reagan brought it back up again, but it went way down through the 80s, and then it kind of stagnated then. But it's much better. We are much better off than we were in the 1960s.
So why are we taxed higher than we ever have been?
Is it to supply? We're not. The highest tax was during World War II.
No, not the highest tax rate. I'm talking about the highest amount of money that's going into the federal government. No, you're right. Tax rates went down under John F. Kennedy. Thank you. He was a Democrat.
It's not even the highest. We had it in World War II.
The government is making more money right now.
In World War II, we had taxes that were higher than 100% of GDP.
World War II is hardly the example that
under Eisenhower, we had a higher tax
rate, but not the actual income to the federal government.
You're not talking numbers.
If we can go into the fundamentals, I can assure you that, yes, conservatives and Republicans do, in fact, have empathy. We do, in fact, care for human beings. We just fundamentally disagree on how best to help those people.
All right, let's take one last break, and then we will definitely get back into it. And if we have time, I do want to ask him about foreign policy and about why maybe a third of Republicans have a newfound love for Vladimir Putin. We'll be right back right after this.
He's a Harvard economist and a Yale lawyer. He does not keep up with the Kardashians. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. Back to the Aggressive Progressive, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Got a few minutes left. I do want to turn our attention to foreign policy. Under Ronald Reagan, the Soviet Union was the evil empire. And I think that the vast majority of Republicans and Democrats, with a few exceptions on either side, but I think if well north of 90% of Republicans and Democrats agreed that the Soviet Union was a bad country. You might disagree on the way to deal with it.
Yeah, we sure did.
But it was a bad country. And I don't think too many people disagree, and I don't think you disagree, Larry, that Putin... It's a change in name, but that Russia, in effect, Putin, the old KGB agent, is basically as much of a dictator as, Khrushchev or Brezhnev ever was. And, he's killing his opponents with poison. And, he's a dangerous character.
I agree with the George W. Bush administration. I don't know why Secretary of State Hillary Clinton brought that reset button over there and why President Obama told Putin's sidekick there that he would have more flexibility to work with Russia after the 2012 re-election. I agree with you, Mark. I'm sure that you consistently had that view waning days of the George W. Bush administration, where they concluded that he was a bad operator.
I have consistently had that view.
So what was wrong with Obama and Hillary Clinton's policy
there? I have even
there.
Criticized Obama for not taking action in Syria that I thought he should.
Yeah.
But here's what I find really amazing is that a recent poll of Republicans saw that 32%, that's not the majority in your party, but it's a third, had a positive opinion of Vladimir Putin, and something like 15 or 16% had a positive opinion of Barack Obama. Your president that you support so much is talking not just really good things about Vladimir Putin, but about Filipino President Duterte. He's talking nice things. He said that Kim Jong-un was a smart cookie, I believe is the exact words he used. He praised the Turkish, formerly Democrat, now really turned dictator, Erdogan. And I want to know if you agree with your president and at least some Republicans' new love of these dictators around the globe.
No.
Okay. So you're willing to, and you loudly
condemn,
condemn Trump for those kinds of statements.
Oh, I do. I do. In fact, I have a lot of disagreements with his foreign policy. I don't get the whole Russia thing. Although I think it's important to separate the policy from the bizarre rhetoric that we see from this president sometimes. I think policy-wise, and the people that he's put in place at the State Department as well as the Pentagon are implementing policies that, I mean, he may say what he wants about Kim Jong-un, but our policy against North Korea is pretty strong and robust right now.
But you agree, Mike Flynn was, I mean, at worst a stooge, and at best a stooge, and at worst a Russian spy. I mean, this is a guy who clearly was lying to the public, lying to Trump. He had connections to Russia that we still don't know all the details of. This is a bad guy that was put in
No, I don't see that. I know there's an investigation going on, and I'll take a look at that. We'll see. I don't know, but I wouldn't get out over my skis the way you have, just saying that at what was it, at best a stooge and at worst a spy for Russia?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't. I think that eventually will be seen to be somewhat overblown analysis.
You do accept that Russia actively hacked into DNC emails and other emails in an attempt to win the election for Donald Trump. You don't dispute that.
Well, I don't know what their motives may have been. I do believe that there was hacking going on.
17 intelligence agencies say their motive was to
elect Donald Trump. One of them is the Coast Guard. That's one of the intelligence agencies. See, everyone uses this 17 intelligence agencies. That's because
And what about the other 16? And what about I mean, Comey's in the tank for Hillary Clinton.
17 of those agencies did not conduct an independent investigation into Russian hacking of the DNC. So, but let me ask you actually.
You don't dispute their findings, do you? You don't know something that all of our intelligence agencies.
No. Listen, WikiLeaks tried to hack into everybody, and I'm sure that they were supported and funded by Russian.
Elect Donald Trump.
No, I don't know the motives. How do you know those motives?
Well, Jim Comey, who's no fan of Hillary Clinton, and I think was completely unfair to her, testified to that. We heard National Security Advisor testify to that.
National Security Advisor?
I think it was Rogers, the one that was next to him in that hearing. I don't remember.
Yeah.
That's why
I haven't seen that. But again, regardless of what their motives are. But can I ask you something?
Yeah.
What about the WikiLeaks hacks ended up tipping the scales for Donald Trump? And why did it only affect voters in Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania? That's odd. If WikiLeaks...
Well,
that's the only way he won, is by getting those states. In other words, if Russia and the WikiLeaks...
Hillary was way ahead in the polls on October 27th.
She was way ahead of the polls on November 8th.
Well, she was... it was like 2 points instead of like 8 points.
2 points? No, it wasn't 2 points.
Two or three.
Are you kidding
me?
Okay,
four. I mean, all the polls show that the late deciders...
I'm pretty sure Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania showed her up almost 10 points.
No, it's not that high.
It's important to recognize that if Russia tipped the scales for Donald Trump because of the WikiLeaks. By the way, the WikiLeaks thing happened in July and August, right? Not right before the election.
Well,
Comey letter happened right before the election.
There's no question that I would agree that Comey had a bigger impact on the election than the Russians. There's no question in my mind Comey not said anything, Hillary Clinton would be president today.
You do.
Without any doubt.
Can I just say, and this is thankfully, you know, I don't know how many people are listening right now, but I want Democrats and progressives to believe that.
Do you want a full investigation?
Me
too.
I really
want Elizabeth
Warren.
How about an independent bipartisan investigation, not conducted by the Republicans?
I have issues with independent bipartisan investigations sometimes.
What's wrong
because
with
they're
independent
not independent or bipartisan. That's why. I haven't seen them ever to be so.
September 11th,
do you think there should be an independent bipartisan investigation into all of the things that conservatives and Republicans were annoyed at during the Obama administration, like the IRS scandal, like the Benghazi affair?
We don't have enough time to go into my views on all of that. But I think both of those were completely made up. And so, yes, I would have loved
And Fast and Furious.
That's
the problem is investigations in Washington, D.C. are used as political
punch holes. But here's the difference. None of that affected the President of the United States. None of that was the President of the United States.
No, it affected American
actively.
Citizens.
What happened with Russia and what the allegation is that they're going to investigate is whether the President of the United States and his transition team and his campaign team actively colluded with a foreign power to commit espionage.
Wait, is there any... Senator Dianne Feinstein was just asked about this 3 days ago. Is there evidence that the Trump campaign colluded? And she said there is no evidence.
She said she has seen no investigation, no evidence as of this time.
Exactly.
You know,
because there's no evidence, we have to have an investigation.
And just to be clear, in July of 1974, there was no evidence that Richard Nixon had committed a cover-up. They had to find the tapes to get that smoking gun. So... but this evidence, I don't understand why you'd be against a bipartisan investigation. Do you think the president should be in charge of investigating himself?
Well, that's the way our government is set up. The president has a Department of Justice.
But
he's not investigating
one of his
himself
minions.
Through Congress.
So remember what Donald Trump said.
There's probably
Trump
more
said.
Enemies of Trump in Congress right now than there are.
Donald Trump actively during the campaign called on Russia to release the information that they had hacked through espionage to harm Hillary Clinton. Now, when I compare that to, say, Watergate, Richard Nixon, some people hacked into some DNC stuff,
yeah.
And he didn't, I mean, he quietly behind the scenes called upon them to use them. Donald Trump openly said, Russians, use this information you illegally obtained.
Yeah, Comey couldn't get it. Let me ask you something. I'm interested
in this. Don't you think that's
worthy
of investigation?
I'm interested in this.
And I'm just watching the time.
Because let's be clear. If you're right, if the hacking of Hillary Clinton's emails via Russia and WikiLeaks caused her to lose the election, let's get to the fundamental...
Lots of things caused her to lose the election, but
let's get to the fundamental aspect of what you're saying.
It's very, very close.
Revealing the truth to the American people is what cost Hillary Clinton the election.
And you support revealing the truth, then?
Of course.
So you support Donald Trump's tax returns being released?
Why is that a truth that the American people deserve to see?
Why not?
If Donald Trump
has $1 billion that he's been borrowing via Russian front companies,
wow, the Russia thing is phenomenal to me.
Know about
I am so glad
should
that the Democrats of
it?
This country have finally come
should
to understand
know about
that
it?
Russia
I mean,
is a danger.
The Constitution says that,
that
you
someone's
take,
tax returns
you can't
need
take
to be
emoluments, shown? You can't take foreign gifts.
Right.
Currently, Trump and his sons have all praised.
I am
praised.
Truly not
Should
interested
Should we know
in,
whether Donald
in
Trump
his,
has Russian business ties? No, you don't care.
No, I think he does have Russian business ties.
And American people have no right to know that.
No, the American people do know. His companies are all public record, and I believe his companies do have some Russian business ties.
So you think that...
You think that he's given
personal...
You think personal,
a private email between Podesta and someone telling, you know, some negative thing about Bernie is more important to American people to know... Then whether or not the President of the United States is being bribed or frankly blackmailed.
I didn't say it was more. Hold on. I didn't say it was more.
You said he'd have no right to know.
Excuse me. I didn't say it's more important for people to know. But I think that it's remarkable that what cost Hillary Clinton the election, in your mind, is the revelation
and
of the truth.
I think it's remarkable that if we had told the truth about Donald Trump's tax returns, there's no doubt in my mind he would not have won the election either. I just think that a private insult in an email is less important than whether or not our greatest enemy is blackmailing the President of the United States.
I want to go back to what I was saying. I want Democrats.
You don't want to disclose the tax returns.
It doesn't matter to me. It really doesn't. I am not concerned about his taxes.
Okay.
I want Democrats. I want Nancy Pelosi. I want Elizabeth Warren and Senator Franken and Cory Booker and all of the people who might run for president. Nancy Pelosi will not run for president. But I want all of the Democrats who might be running for president against Donald Trump. I want them to believe that everything Hillary Clinton stood for, everything that she did, everything on the platform, and everything that she did to communicate her ideas was spot on and deserved the presidency, and she would have won if it weren't for Comey and WikiLeaks.
Absolutely.
Because she was the best person for the job, and the American people loved her and loved her policies.
She was a perfect messenger.
No, you're right. Messenger may not be best, but the message was on, the policies were right.
You know,
the Democrats are in line with the American people, and that's why you've lost 800 seats. Nationwide,
you know, it's
since
interesting.
Obama
we
won.
Have had elections since 1992, and Democrats have won 6 out of 7 presidential elections by the majority of the American
Absolutely.
People.
Absolutely.
So I actually think people
presidential, you guys
do
have
care
got
about each other.
And meanwhile, state houses.
I'm
and
afraid our time is up. If you want to watch this show again, go to marklevinetalk.com. This is Mark Levine signing off.